Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 4th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we kick off this week on Bang the Book Radio. Didn't have a show yesterday. Once again, I'll echo what I said on Twitter, sending well wishes to Kyle Hunter on his recovery from last week's surgery. But in any event, we are starting up this week on Bang the Book Radio here on Tuesday with one guest. His name is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll recap and wrap up the Super Bowl. We'll talk NHL. We'll talk golf with the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am here, this week's PGA Tour event. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of other stuff to talk about along the way. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff. Great cast of writers. Noops' NBA power ratings have been a big hit over at the website. Make sure you check those out. We've got daily picks from Chris Wassel in the NBA. We've got daily picks every day from Parker Michaels in the NHL. I'm about ready to start rolling out some of my Major League Baseball content here over the next week or so. So plenty of stuff going on over at the website. James Mazzola will have a preview of this AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am for us, so be on the lookout for that later on tonight. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well, Adam. Life after football. The only thing I can say, the saving grace, is could you imagine if the sports books graded the props the way they put the results out in the Iowa caucus?
Oh, man.
Could you, what? You got to be kidding me. I'm watching this stuff. I'm like, thank God I do sports.
I mean, it's only 2020, and we only have a ton of technology available, you know. So, I mean, I don't know.
It's hilarious.
It's sad. It's what it is. But all right. Well, let's talk some Super Bowl here. 49ers and Chiefs. We talked a lot last week, well, really the last 2 weeks, about this game. You did some prop videos for us over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. You and I talked about this game for 2 weeks and talked extensively about it last week and a lot of the different props that we liked. So how'd the Super Bowl finish up for you, Brian?
A mixed bag is probably the word, but I would say actually – well, and I think our videos, we did really well on the props. The I like San Fran and the under, so that was, you know, the one aspect. But we did talk about that you could make a case for either team, and I liked props better than the game. San Fran and the under, to me, the way the game was played, that's what it was. Then Kyle Shanahan put his Falcons cap on, and, you know, it's just a bizarre ending. Full marks to the Chiefs for coming back. I thought the one play that drove me nuts, you know, the pass to Hill certainly got the Chiefs rolling, but the play that I thought was the death knell was right after that with a field goal lead. Mostert gets 6 yards on first down, and you want to take time off the clock, but you got to impose your will. You got to change the field position. You want to go, you maybe get some more scores. They had no answers for Samuels. They didn't give him the ball hardly at all in the second half, but then they threw the ball on second down. The pass got batted down. Garoppolo incomplete pass, three and out. They gave the ball right back. That second down call to me, and not Monday morning quarterback. We're watching the game. So, like, run it. Just keep running it right down her throat. Do what you do best. But as it ended up, KC and the under was a great result for the books. From the props perspective, what we had talked about, I had three props that really I built my day around. That was Mahomes' longest rush over 11.5, which got bet up to 13.5. He got a 13-yarder. His first rush was over 4.5. The one we liked best of all was Daniel Sorensen's tackles, where that number was at 5.5, and he had 8 and 9 tackles, respectively, in the last two games. Plus, you got him on special teams. He flew over that total. If he's in the middle of the field, he's going to be the guy tackling Kelsey. So that one worked out. And then, actually, over at the Superbook, they've got a parlayable page, which are generally sucker bets, but diving into it, I said, you know, I'll take a little kick at the can here. Like everything we had talked about last week, the parlay was no score in the first 6.5 minutes, which is an odd thing where you're sitting there and you're like, you know, that whole bet is, it was on one play. It's like, catch that. You can't, you know, keep the clock running, move the chains, don't kick the field goal. But it gets there. Then it was the three unanswered scores, which was, you know, minus $1.90. That was the one that was the toughest of the lot. And then teamed that up with the first rush over 4.5 for Mahomes. That being said, I was one of those guys and got the rude awakening after the game. I said, if I like Mahomes' longest rush over 11.5 and I like Mahomes' first rush over 4.5, how do you not play Mahomes over? By the time he got bet up, it was 32.5 and still did it. Well, he gets it up to 44 yards. Not even thinking, you know, in a cookie jar, bets over. That there's another winner. Mark that one down. And the kneel downs he takes at the end of the game, he goes backwards 10 yards and 5 yards and ends up with 28 yards rushing. That is, to me, when we talk about the long list of we've all got horrible beats, that's a grisly beat, man. I mean, he flew over the rushing total and then gave it all back on the last two plays of the game kneeling down.
Yeah, that's one that's going to be talked about for a long time, to say the least. The only thing
Why is that a rush? That should be like a non... I don't know. There should be a category for that. I don't know, in a box score, you know, if you're surrendering yourself or if it's a victory formation or a kneel down thing. I guess it's not. I mean, I guess in pass. But, nor, I mean, 99 times out of 100. And I understand the premise of going back and killing an extra 5 seconds to not move the play clock. I mean, no beef with all of that. But 99 times out of 100, take the snap, take a knee. I mean, okay, great. He gave 2 yards back. He finishes with 40 yards rushing. And he flew over the projected total. But anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough thing, is the fact that, you know, I mean, just the way that the circumstances kind of played out late in that game. I'm actually fortunate because I didn't play the Mahomes rushing over. I played Mahomes cross-sport prop with Carey Price saves on Sunday, and I think he only had 22 or 23 saves for the Canadians. So that cross-sport prop came through for me. I was actually kind of surprised he played that game. But, you know, I had a couple of difficult beats myself. One of them, I know Brad Powers, who's on our show on Thursdays, had this one. We both had Kansas City under 4.5 players with a rushing attempt. And inexplicably, Travis Kelce gets a carry for 2 yards.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't know where the hell that came from.
I would wear that one. What was the other one? There was one other one. The cross-sport ones are water cooler things. They're really tough because you got to handicap two things unless you really think you got an edge. But I saw one. I said, man, I got to take a shot with this one because I did play the Vancouver Carolina game over, I think it was 5.5. But I played the over in that game. It ended up being 4-3 the final. But I played Vancouver and Carolina goals versus Chiefs field goals and touchdowns in the first half. And I played the under 26.5, under 27 in the first half. So I like that first half under. I said, well, I do think the hockey game's going over. So I think the only way you want to really get involved with that, like, is if you really believe, you know, you like both of them very much, that you give yourself a bit of a cushion. And that one won kind of handily.
So it's fun. I mean, the Super Bowl was such a roller coaster for me, and obviously for a lot of people. You know, the Mahomes thing, that last touchdown from Damian Williams pushed the second half over the total, and a lot of people played that second half over. I know that's one that some of the retail sports books out in Vegas got hit very hard on. The Kelce carry screwed me. I had both teams make a field goal of 32-plus. Butker's field goal was from 31, so Ooh. That was all kinds of fun. But then I also got super lucky. I had Patrick Mahomes to score the first touchdown at 16-18-1, something like that. And I think Damian Williams was in the end zone with that second attempt. They never reviewed it. Mahomes winds up scoring the touchdown on that fake option play. So I got that one. And then I also had Juszczyk for first San Francisco touchdown at 17.5-1.
Oh, nice.
So I hit two of the first touchdown props. Otherwise, the game would have been, by and large, a disaster for me. I did hit the Sorensen prop, but a lot of the other things I played didn't really come through. But it's amazing. You know, everyone talks about this Vegas knows and this and that, and that's not really the case. But, man, so many of these props were actually lined really, really well and kind of came down to some of the little plays in the fourth quarter and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. You know, obviously, if you go into the Super Bowl looking to make money, you bet it differently than you do if you're looking to have fun with it. But At least some of the stuff we talked about on the show here for 2 weeks came through.
Well, and the funny thing is, if it could be some of the things that you're involved with, every one of them's close. Because if you're tying certain things in to an offensive guy to a defensive guy, there's every prop. It's not, oh, okay, hey, this guy's getting this. Every guy is correlated to about seven other things. So it stands to reason that a number of the props that are correlated, if the game flows the way you believe it is, a number of them will be falling right around the number. It's great. It was great fun. I enjoyed it. And it was the props in finding those plus prices, and like I said, the parlayable page, things of that nature can make your day. The other thing, the MVP, let me tell you something. I mean, I think you could have made a case for Damian Williams. That's what we said. That's why Mahomes was 3-5. He was deserving. He got him back in it. But that Mahomes would virtually scoop up every Chief. But I thought, you know, the fact that the Chiefs were able to get something out of the running back position, I thought was a big difference maker for them. I thought he had a real good game. He moved the chains on some great plays. But had San Francisco won the game, I was listening to some people the other day, and I'm like, what game were you watching? Well, you know, if San Francisco wins, you know, Garoppolo would have been the MVP. And I'm like, pardon me? Like, I mean, are you telling me if they'd have kept doing what they were doing in there in the second half? I mean, Deebo Samuel was a lock to be the MVP. I mean, he was, I don't care if he scored or he didn't score. This guy was doing everything. He was unstoppable, and then they got away from him. I swear, football drives me nuts. Teams start, you're killing a team, and then you start to sit back. Things that are working until they figure a way to stop it. Why stop doing it?
Yeah, there were a lot of little details about the Super Bowl that, you know, really stood out. I mean, Kyle Shanahan, I mentioned this a million times on the show. I love the guy. I have a man crush on the guy. I love his play design. But once again, in the, you know, second half and, you know, specifically the fourth quarter of a big game, I mean, he disappeared again. I mean, he just went way too conservative. And that is something that I will think about next year. If San Francisco winds up getting back into this position, or even if they're just in the NFC Championship game, that is something I'm absolutely going to have to think about. And again, same thing with the MVP, like you mentioned. I mean, Damian Williams, 133 yards on 21 touches, had two touchdowns, but Mahomes wins the MVP. And
he did, but if Williams doesn't do that, and what have we said about the Chiefs all year long? It's a red flag when your quarterback is your leading rusher. And finally, they got massive production from the running back position. Yes, Mahomes threw the pick. I mean, you know, he was clutch. I'd probably have a bigger stone in my shoe if I had Damian Williams. But I really thought, in terms of the impact of that game, Kansas City, in what was a close game, got massive production from the running back position, which they never get. And, oh, by the way, the guy scored two touchdowns. And it wasn't just the touchdowns. How about some of the plays, little swing pass to him in the flat. He makes three guys miss, and he moves the chains, and he keeps the drive alive. I thought Williams made some of the absolute key plays in the game.
He did, but basically where I'm just going with this is it kind of underscores that, I mean, look, it's very hard not to win this thing if you're a quarterback. You know, I mean, skill position guys just don't get it because the quarterback gets that production too. You know, it's exactly what we talked about last week. There's a reason why there hasn't been a running back to win the MVP since 98. I mean, again, Williams probably had the stat line for it, but, and again, I mean, Mahomes deserved it. I think the way that he was so jittery in the first half, didn't look right, had the two picks, seemed to be panicking against the rush, even when it didn't get there, but then he made the plays when he had to, and Garoppolo had a guy downfield, overthrew him by 4 yards. That could have completely changed the complexion of the game. Mahomes made the plays. Garoppolo didn't. Mahomes gets the MVP, deservedly so. But again, this is why it's so hard to take a skill position guy, because Mahomes, the quarterback's going to spread it around. And even if he doesn't, he's getting all that production too. So really for me, I think when you look at future Super Bowls here, it's quarterback or it's
defender.
Defense, and that's
yeah.
It.
I would exactly. Yeah, the quarterbacks, we talked about this on the podcast last week, that specifically See, I think, honestly, I really believe if San Fran had won, I think Debo Samuel would have been the MVP. But we said anybody on KC, Mahomes would scoop it from them. Not expected Williams to have that kind of game. But you're right. I think it's quarterback or, you know, if Bosa bats a ball down on the first play, if Bosa gets a couple of sacks, you know, in that game, he forced a fumble in the game. You know, if that's a 19-17 kind of game, a defender could win it, right? I mean, so I agree with you. It's quarterback or defender.
I would have liked to have seen if Kyle Juszczyk gets in with that second reception where he got tackled at the 1 yard line. I mean, is there a chance that he gets it with like, you know, 40 yards and two touchdowns? I mean,
yes, because had they won the game, he's also like the guy that's opening all the holes for the running back. So you would reward him for what he does best. And then, oh, by the way, score two touchdowns. Absolutely. I think he would have been, had he gotten a second touchdown and had San Fran won the game, I think absolutely he'd have been in play.
Yeah, that would have been crazy. It would have been cool to see too. Also, he's a local guy here. He's from Medina, Ohio. So that was pretty cool. But one other thing I want to ask you about here, you know, all the reports are going to start coming in today with official bottom lines for the states and the different operators and all that. But Vegas did very well on the game. Circus Sportsbook actually didn't. They took a couple of hits on some exact point totals and some of the other stuff. They are very, you know, aggressive in their risk management approach, though. So, you know, I mean, they gamble a little bit, too, and credit to them for that. I know I think I heard on Visa that MGM had a big swing with the second half going over the total. But by and large, Vegas did very well. Now, when we look around the rest of the country, I've seen some reports that New Jersey, you know, overall the sports books lost money. In Pennsylvania, the sports books appear to have lost a pretty decent amount of money relative to the handle. How the hell do you lose money on this Super Bowl where the Chiefs do cover, but the game stays under? Mahomes had a good game, but not a great game. A lot of unders on player props, no safety, no overtime, no two-point conversion. How do you lose money on this thing? I think it's going to be interesting to see how those states adapt and adjust in future Super Bowls.
Yeah, I think the simple answer, I guess, and it may not be right, would be that it's really general public money, you know, in these new, where it's newer and the jurisdictions and the general public, you know, was infatuated with the Chiefs, would be the belief. But, you know, combination wise, if they were correlated, San Fran and the under, correlated KC and the over, for it to be KC and the under would be the optimum position for a lot of places. Every book has liability with futures and all these other things, but across the board in Vegas, and this is what we had talked about last week, I think when we did the podcast last week, Adam, we said that total was at 55, and I firmly believe 53.5 would at least make an appearance, that late in the week, sharp money was going to come back and start hammering the under. So for Vegas, the key was that game stayed under the total. And if that game stayed under the total, Vegas was going to be a winner.
Well, and that's something you do talk about on Sportsbook Radio every week. I know you did a lot of stuff with the Super Bowl last week. You did a couple prop shows there at the Westgate. So, you know, I know everything slows down to a degree for you here, but, you know, how did things wrap up, you know, in terms of the prop show and everything that you had going on last week?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, the week is kind of a whirlwind, but we did two shows over at the Superbook, which is just jaw-dropping when you walk in there, and it's just such a cool place. Jay Cornegay rolled out the red carpet for us. But this is like I lost track. I don't know. It's 8-9 years we've been doing this in a row. But Oscar, I give Oscar Goodman, God bless him, he's a good friend. And I call Oscar, say, hey, we're doing the prop thing again. Oh, okay, fine. What day? And then they set it up, and Oscar and the showgirls, and then, you know, Oscar says he's going to do it. Then the LVCVA, they call all the TV stations, and he walks in, and the place erupts, and he's a circus act, and they get him his big drink, and he came on. He did the whole hour of the one day, and had a lot of laughs, and it was good fun. And then Friday, we're out at Sunset Station. Saturday night, we had a Golden Knights hockey party, and that was cool. A lot of people were playing Golden Knights props in that hockey game into the Super Bowl. And then, you know, Sunday, another big party out at Sunset Station for the game. The week's kind of a blur. Monday hits, and you're like, actually, last night, you know, there's a good 3-hour nap that out of nowhere hit. But now it's like the highlight of it, to be honest with you, bud. And we're so fortunate we do what we do. But the week between the Super Bowl and the off week was the first true weekend, like a Saturday and a Sunday off. And it was thrilled. The Golden Knights were like on the dark side of the moon. They're out of town. It was like a weekend off, first time since August. But now football ends, I actually get weekends off. So you kind of get your life back for a little bit. But then before you know it, they'll be in training camp and we line up and start going 7 days a week again in August.
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is one of the busiest times of the year for me with my MLB guide. And then I write conference tournament previews for every conference over at bangthebook.com. And then also, of course, we do the handwritten March Madness game previews. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on here over the next 2 months over at the website. But one thing I do want to ask you about here real quickly before we transition over to the NHL, the XFL, I will admit, and shame on me for this, because, you know, it is football. It is something that a lot of people are kind of getting a buzz about. I have not looked at all whatsoever at any of the rosters. I've seen the win totals in passing that like Caesars put up. I have not paid any attention to the XFL whatsoever. Is that anything that you've kind of started to dive into at all?
Literally 25 minutes ago on Twitter, I just got up and started looking at my stuff, and some people I know followed the XFL on Twitter. I'm like, I guess. So I followed the XFL. That's it. That is my first foray into the XFL. So I guess I would give it the opportunity. I watch a game or two, A, to see if it's worth watching, but most importantly to watch it to see, are you picking anything up trend-wise that makes it worth really paying attention to it? But as of today, the short answer is no. I heard somebody say, what's the kid's name? The Bills drafted him from Ohio State, and he ended up with San Diego. I guess, is it Cardale Jones?
Yeah.
Is one of the quarterbacks. That's my, right there, that's my working knowledge of the XFL. The Cardale Jones is a quarterback. That's it.
That's about mine, too. And it's tough. I mean, I imagine there's going to be a market for it. I'm sure people want it covered. I haven't been able to get to it yet, especially trying to make up some ground here with all this baseball stuff. So, no promises for our listeners and our readers out there, but try to dabble into it a little bit here.
Well, we'll see, but let's get to the chase here. And this hockey stuff is so amazing. And I'll just say this, because we did this last Tuesday. I'm doing a new thing. It's called the Hockey Betting Podcast with Cam Stewart, who's hilarious. We do that Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I put it out on my Twitter at Brian Blessing, but it's at betchriscanada.net. And we dive into the hockey, and this sport is the best to bet, right? I mean, let's cut to the chase. And you were bringing up the point last week. We sat there. We rode that wave. It was utterly ridiculous that the league did a better job of getting teams to try to get teams coming off a bye, play a team coming off a bye. There's just no way to do it across the board. It's insane. The teams that had a game under their belt just murdered the teams that were coming off the bye. The first game off a bye is just a brutal game to play. You know, Columbus is asleep at the switch. Eichel beats out you. I know you were happy. You were texting me during the game. You were flipping out. Eichel wins it in overtime. Then, like, automatically, not only were the opportunities on the front end, Adam, but then you're like, it's the next game, okay? Columbus loses at Buffalo. Now they're going to play Montreal. They got their legs underneath them. And because they lose to Buffalo, you get a low number on them against Montreal. So it wasn't just the teams come. You get them in the first game, lose, but then you get the quality teams to bounce back in their second game. It was one of the best weeks ever in the NHL in terms of making money.
Yeah, I had a listener reach out to me and said that bye week trend last week went 10-1. And of course, the one that lost was Arizona, which I had as the third leg of a parlay with Buffalo and Montreal. So of course, you know, the one that loses is the one that really hurts me, because those are the three spots I talked about extensively on the show last week, but they still went 2-1 with the three I talked about. And that bye week trend, if you picked up on it, was very, very good. Even Vancouver beating the Islanders in that weird afternoon spot for them in Brooklyn. Islanders first game off the bye. Vancouver had been playing. Even they came away with the win in that one. So it was brilliant. It was great. Hopefully you took advantage of that from us talking about it here on the show. And you know, this will probably be a thing again next year. The NHL does a better job, like you said, but they can't line everybody up like that. So I think next year, again, something that we'll definitely hammer home.
And I'll just throw one out there, because the best event of the weekend, and it wasn't close, and I'm going to venture a slight guess you didn't see it. Did you see Edmonton-Calgary Saturday night?
The Battle of Alberta. Both games were
good. Oh, my God. Listen, let me tell you something. And first of all, we won't go down this rabbit hole, but the analytics and the power ratings and the this and the that. But Wednesday night, they played an incredible game. Physical, mean, nasty, and it goes to a shootout. And at the end of the game, Rittich, and I had Calgary that night, and Rittich makes the save to end the game, and he does the Batista bat flip with the stick at the end of the game. And I immediately said to myself, I am jumping all over Edmonton. I am coming back with Edmonton in this game on Saturday night, 8th, just to watch it. They were fighting. The goalies went at it. But that bat flip, I said, this is in no box score. There's no power rating. There's no nothing telling you this. That's watching a game and knowing how hockey players think. And sure enough, Edmonton comes out like their hair's on fire. They chase Rittich out of the game. And they had to pull him. They didn't pull him between periods. They had to pull him during the period, and he's skating to the bench. And every guy on the Oilers is standing up, screaming at the guy they just chased out of the game, just in his face, right? Then you get the goalie fight, and Rittich has to come back in because the goalies got kicked up, and they scored three more on him. The players get the license plate, man, and I'm telling you, that would have been a no-box score. That's just knowing how these guys are, and you're getting this juicy. They were like, I think they were plus $1.65. It was something ridiculous. And like they wanted Rittich's head on a plate, and they played that game like their life depended on it. It was awesome.
I'm telling you, man, I swear to God, I want those two teams to meet in the playoffs so bad.
Last day of the regular season they play, bud. And there's right as of today, right? Or maybe not, are they? I mean, there's a real possibility they play. They're separated by a point or two. Oh, here, I got it. Let's see here. As of today, they are not. No, because Calgary fell behind Vegas. So
Calgary
Edmonton
does have a game in hand, though. But Edmonton's got two.
Oh, yeah, and you can throw a blanket over all these teams. I'll tell you, there are a couple really good stories in the NHL. The Pittsburgh story is lunacy with the injuries that they've had, that they are 33-14-5. It really remarkable what they did with Crosby out and all the injuries they had. Winnipeg was a nice story at the beginning of the year with no defensemen. Now they're falling off the map. They've got to make the trade. But I'm telling you, one of the best stories, and it's just flying under the radar. I thought Vancouver was a nice team, young guys heading the right way. Yeah, they'll be there and they'll fall short. I don't know, man. They're 30-18-5, and the key is they're keeping the Pettersson kid healthy, but it's more than him. They're getting good goaltending. I think that's a pretty good goalie combination with Markstrom and Demko, but you've got guys like Bessert and Horvat, and one of the best moves made in the offseason nobody's talking about. Vancouver got JT Miller from Tampa Bay. This guy has made a world of difference. This Vancouver team, they're not going anywhere.
You know, as I look at the West here, and maybe this is a good time to start taking a look at this. I know you kind of wait until the trade deadline and everything settles down to start making some of your futures and taking a look from that standpoint. But Colorado here, sitting third in the Central Division, they are plus 33 in goal differential. That's the best in the Western Conference by 15 goals. St. Louis and Vancouver both plus 18. I mean, is Colorado a team that the arrow's kind of pointing up with them?
Oh, and in fact, I don't know if you can punch it up or I can find it real quick, but yeah, what their odds are. If I was going to play somebody, and I generally just refuse to do it until the trade deadline, but I've said all along, I like Colorado in the West. And now the fact that they're, you know, down just a little bit, this team is the real deal, man. In a series, see, the thing is, when you're playing and watching a team, look at Tampa last year. You know, the regular season is the regular season. And the thing you get is, okay, this is a quality team, and this team knows how to play back-to-back nights, or, you know, this team's really good on the road, or, you know, all the things they can do and massage a lineup in the regular season. It doesn't mean a hill of beans until when you get in the playoffs, when you're playing the same team over and over every other night, and the matchups in a series. It's just for, throw the regular season out, and Colorado is a matchup nightmare. They absolutely are. And if they're healthy, you know, they're going to be fine. And honestly, I think they're more than sound in the net. I mean, let's see what they end up doing here the rest of the way. It's still Grubauer. He's played 30 games. But the Francouz kid, don't sleep on him. He's been really good, too. Goaltending, to me, would be the one question mark with Colorado. But from a speed perspective, and they've got some physical guys. Calvert's a terrific player when you get to the playoffs. And Cole's a big, strong guy. I think Colorado is a team built to really do damage in the playoffs. And so, yes, they would be a team. If you asked me today, would you play a team of future, it would be Colorado.
Looks like Colorado about in the 10-1 range out there, which actually is one of the lowest prices in the Western Conference. So, you know, again, looking at some of their metrics, looking at the fact they do have two games in hand on Dallas, who's in front of them, three games in hand on St. Louis, who they trail by 8 points in the division here. Again, they've got that goals differential. They've got the most goals scored in the Western Conference. You know, this is a team that, you know, obviously kind of getting some love out there in the futures market. But as far as the East, you mentioned Pittsburgh, you mentioned liking them a little bit. Obviously Boston and Tampa Bay are going to be there until the end, probably in the Atlantic Division. But other than that, you know, we've talked about this. Toronto's not good in their own zone. Florida did not play well early on. They've kind of turned things around a little bit. Same thing with Columbus, who's been very, very hot. Philadelphia's now been hot. They're creeping back into the picture. Any sort of, I don't want to say under the radar team, but anybody outside of the top teams you think has any chance in the East?
I would give the Islanders a puncher's chance with Trotz. The Islanders would be one I'd take a mini kick at. You know, the Leafs have no defense. The Bruins are gritty. They get good goaltending. They find ways. You know, people are in love with Florida. I'm not buying Florida. I love Florida, actually, last night. They were Barkov was out, and that was another situational play. Toronto was life and death to beat Ottawa the other night, and here's Florida coming up to play them. But Barkov was out, so the number goes through the roof, and Florida beats them. Actually, it was a cool story. They put Mark Pizik, who's a defenseman, because Barkov was out. They threw the defenseman, who I think he's played 400 NHL games, and he had 4 goals, I think, going in. They throw him up at forward last night, and he got a hat trick. You know, but Florida, you know, Florida's the deeper team. Toronto, I think, is so flawed in their own end. You know, Washington and Pittsburgh, it's hard to say they're going to be a very, very tough out. The East is, to me, I couldn't tell you. I mean, but if you want the overlaid price, I would. They just don't score. You know, we'll see what they do at the deadline. But Trotz, man, when you get into a series, don't sleep on Barry Trotz, and don't think the coach doesn't matter when you get in a playoff series.
Yeah, Islanders somewhere between 20 and 25-1 out there in the futures market. But Brian, as we take a look at a massive card here for Tuesday night, I believe there's 13 games on the card here this evening. You got Florida in a back-to-back. They take on Columbus. Dallas in a back-to-back. They're doing that New York, New Jersey swing. They play the Islanders tonight. One I will tell you I like here, we'll start with one that I like. You got to take Arizona tonight, right? Short favorite price, -125. Edmonton off that big emotional game Saturday night. I know they've had a little bit of time to come down from it, but I don't know, man. I feel like they're kind of an auto fade when you got a big rivalry like that with physical games, emotional games. That next game is a real tough one. So I like Arizona a bit tonight.
Yeah, the letdown thing, we mentioned that on our podcast. You think Edmonton and Calgary, be leery of the letdown. The only thing, and I'm not trying to talk you off it, the only thing I would say, when Arizona wins a game, play them. Start playing them. I've never seen a team like this. They've done this like four or five times this year. Win four, lose four. Win five, lose five. They're in the middle of a five-game losing streak. When they stop the bleeding, start playing them. But Rant has been a sieve. They've got to get Kemper back.
Yeah. No, that's definitely one. I noticed that, too, you know, with Antti Raanta playing in that game against Chicago. It actually wasn't bad. There were a ton of shots on goal in that game. Raanta made some saves, had that highlight save, the scorpion save, as they like to call it. But Chicago winds
up. But what does that tell you how bad they're playing? It's the only one of 11 games that a team coming off, you know, the team coming off a break was able to win. That's how bad Arizona's playing. They beat a team that was coming off the break. You know, they're playing horribly at the moment. But when they win a game, they'll go on a four-game winning streak. That's just been their MO all year long. It could be tonight. I'm not trying to talk you off it.
Right.
But when they win, I get on Arizona again. But I'm going nowhere near them until they win a game. Because right now, I'm worried about them, you know, finding their way to the arena.
No, that's definitely a very fair point. What do you like on tonight's card?
The crazy thing is, with this bevy of games, a really tough night. I mean, we were hard pressed to come up with some games. There's like some fly in the one of the best angles all year long. I'll throw it out there. I'm not gonna do it. You know, Vegas won a couple of games off the break, and they're just playing a simple game, dump and chase. But it's not like, you know, they've reinvented the wheel. They had a 2-goal lead against Carolina, let it get away, but then won the game on a power play at the tail end of the game. Then they had a really good effort, but Nashville's a dog's breakfast right now. Then Vegas goes to Florida. They had the weekend in Florida. Now, they could be implementing some stuff finally with a practice with Pete DeBoer, but these guys had a couple days off in Florida, maybe did some golf, watched the Super Bowl. But it's Tampa coming home, first game from a long road trip, and we've been printing money, fading teams like that. I think that the extra couple of days down in Florida scares me on that one, but that should be an interesting game. The Colorado was $1.35 on the opener. It's up to $1.75. We talked about it yesterday. What's that number? What's that all about? Carter Hutton came back. He had lost 11 in a row before he won the game, the 2-1 game against Columbus. But that was a team coming off a bye who, if they had eggs in their hockey pants, wouldn't have broken one egg during the course of the game. Now they're taking on Colorado. I kind of like that game to go over, Colorado-Buffalo to go over 6.5. The sneaky one I think is an over game is Anaheim and Ottawa. The total on the game is 6. It's an out-of-conference game. You know, two teams hopelessly out of it. I think it's a game that could – and all of a sudden, you know, this is an Anaheim team is starting to score goals a little bit. But Gibson is really good. But Anderson, they're talking about this guy getting traded. But Ottawa's got Shabbat. This kid plays 28 minutes a game. Kachuk and the Pageau kid. There's actually some sneaky offense out there. And I think for two teams that are hopelessly out of it, I think it could be a fun kind of pond hockey kind of game. So of all the games, I kind of like Anaheim and Ottawa over the 6. And other than that, it's a tough card. Maybe Carolina-St. Louis over 5.5. But it's a tough card tonight, bud.
You look at that Carolina-St. Louis game. First home game for St. Louis since January 15th. They were on the road. They had the All-Star game there. They go to the bye. Then they start on the road again. So first home game for them since January 15th. Thursday is the first home game for Florida since January 16th. And then obviously Vegas, they'll finally be going back home for the first time in forever here in the not-too-distant future.
I would just throw that out there that Vegas getting these two wins for them is big because they face an absolute murderer's row here, and they're in a dogfight. So them getting these two wins on this trip was a big deal. Now we'll see what they do in the Florida swing. But they will be playing on February 8th, their first home game in a month. They had a four-game Eastern road trip before the All-Star break, then the All-Star break, their break, and another four-game Eastern road swing. Twice they've come home from 4-plus game road trips and have been absolutely mauled in both of those games. And they're coming home Saturday to play Carolina, who's got a stone in their shoe, who Vegas just beat at the last minute the other night. I think that first game back for Vegas, Carolina, I'd pencil that one in. Watch out. That is just a – and it's DeBoer's first game in Vegas, but, you know, the first game home, I think the road team might have a say in the matter here. And teams are coming into Vegas, by the way. There ain't no Vegas flu anymore. Vegas is getting everybody's best shot. Everybody comes here ready to play from the drop of the puck, and that's what we've seen all year long.
Yeah, I will definitely like Carolina on that one. One other one for tonight that's kind of intriguing here, Los Angeles. And we talked about this a little bit last week. I talked about it in my situation article. The Kings have been awful on the road. I mean, they've been pretty competent at home for the most part. They've been really, really bad on the road. But I don't know if you play a lot of the plus 1.5 puck lines. Tonight they're plus 1.5 minus $1.20 or so. I don't mind this spot for them. Washington comes off Sunday's game against Pittsburgh. You know, they play a lot of big games in conference. You know, they get a lot of these spotlight games with Ovechkin and the big following that they have. I kind of like Los Angeles a little bit here, plus that 1.5, and may take a small piece at them at more than a 2-1 dog too.
All right. It's funny. So you start talking about it. So I quick punch up their schedule and we talk about situational things, right? Team X, team Y. I don't care who the teams are. That we say the first game home from a long road trip is brutal to play for the home team. But this other thing that, and I know we've mentioned it on this podcast, but really this year started to really say, you know, it makes complete sense. And now the more I think about it, and I've been watching it, when teams are going on a 4-game road trip, starting a long road trip, they invest a ton of energy and want to get a trip off to a good start. In the first game of a long road trip, the road team is extremely dangerous. So that was just kind of a blanket statement. So now you say that. I go look real quick. October 22nd, the Kings are starting a 4-game road trip in Winnipeg. They won 3-2. Then there was December 12th. They were starting a 6-game road trip at Anaheim. They won 2-1. January 9th, they were starting a 5-game road trip. They won in Vegas 5-2. And Washington's almost a $3 favorite in their first of a 4-game Eastern road swing. The plus 1.5 at that low number, I think, is of interest. And you know, take a mini flyer on the Kings at that balloon number. Oh, by the way, Washington just played their bitter rival. Washington just played Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, the air's out of the balloon. Oh, great, we're playing the Kings after playing the Penguins. There's a lot of reasons to say play the Kings.
Well, we'll see if that one comes through for us here tonight. One other item of business to take care of here on this segment, that is the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Obviously, it's been an interesting golf slate. You know, we had the three courses in the American Express. You've got the Waste Management Phoenix Open, which is an animal unto itself in the golf world. Now this Pro-Am, where you got a bunch of celebrities, a bunch of athletes alongside the pros. You got three different courses here in this one, too. Another tricky handicap, I would say.
Well, I would say I don't think we mentioned him last week, but we almost got on a golf Tootsie roll, which would have been great. I think we had some people get back to us. We did have Leishman, right? 45-1 or 50-1. We had him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. On Friday night, I bet Tony Finau last weekend. And of course, he blows a 2-shot lead with 2 holes to go. Bet him 30-1 on Friday night. He shot a 62 on Saturday. So the golf's going good. We're in the hunt. And this tournament is really an interesting one, Adam, because you've got to think of the personalities here. You know, golf form matters, but you're playing all the different courses, but it's a 4-day party and the clam bakes and all the things they do off the course. But the golfers are out there playing 5.5, 6-hour rounds. They're playing with amateurs. They stand around. They wait. You know, there are certain guys, they got no shot. They're miserable. They're not having it. They're not embracing the atmosphere. And then there are guys that just, you know, have fun with it, play well, and oh, by the way, get to Sunday. Let's go. This is a golf tournament. Let's make some money. So you got to be in the hunt on Sunday. I would look, and I do this a lot, I look for guys that show you signs of life on a weekend and take it into the next week. Daniel Berger had a really good weekend at the Waste Management. Daniel Berger, 40-1. I think this kid's recaptured his form of a couple of years ago. Daniel Berger, 40-1. He's my top pick. I'd be a fool, and I can be a fool, but I'd be a fool not to play Pat Perez. We always talk about Pat Perez in California before this ship sails in California. Pat Perez is 75-1. And then I've got one where I'll shoot for the moon, and then I'm going to really come back on Friday night. Ted Potter's actually not playing horribly. He's 200-1. He won this thing 2 years ago, and his form's not that bad. So I've already played Daniel Berger, Pat Perez, and Ted Potter, and then on Friday night, we'll see where you stand.
You look at Daniel Berger here, only one start at Pebble Beach. I was back in 2015, but he was 10th. So, you know, maybe he just takes this week off usually, but doesn't seem to mind the format. Obviously, Dustin Johnson, your favorite. He's won here twice. Lots and lots of top 10s. Doesn't really mind the guy that he's playing with. So, you know, that's one of those situations where he's at 6.5-1 or so. Very, very low price, but you know, you certainly expect a guy like him to be in the hunt.
And he, you know, we know Dustin Johnson at Pebble Beach. Everything sets up beautifully for him. He just got done playing in Europe, right? I mean, the travel to me is a thing. I just couldn't go. I couldn't go down there. The other guy who lost in a playoff, who also plays good, I played him in matchups, lost in the playoff to Mickelson last year, was Casey. Casey's at 20-1. Paul Casey might be a sneaky good play. I actually, the more I think about it, might take a little piece of Paul Casey here on the front end too at 20-1.
Yeah, another guy in that 20-1 range, you know, Brandon Grace at 25-1 is kind of interesting. He's playing really, really well. Doesn't really mind this format a whole lot. A couple of top 30s, not great by any means, but he's got a win in a top 10 here over his last four events. Maybe he's not a bad guy. Seems to be kind of a fun guy, sort of a happy-go-lucky type of dude to a degree. Maybe this is a, you know, a format that he doesn't mind. And like you said, too, I mean, I think it's so important to talk about that, yeah, Sunday is business, but the first 54 holes can be a real challenge. Yep. You're out there, like you said, standing around. You got, you know, Bill Murray cracking jokes and a bunch of other people just kind of having fun with this. Somebody who's been pretty good in this, and I don't really know necessarily about his recent form, but Jimmy Walker's got 5 top 10s here since 2011. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a guy you kind of take a look at 100-1.
Yeah, I mean, we can't give them all out. Like I said, I played those three. Casey, I think, it could maybe make the short list. But guys I've used in matchups that actually, you'd still get 30-1 on them if they're in the hunt on Friday night. A couple of guys, Chez Reavy at 60-1. And Lanto Griffith is 100-1. He's leading the FedEx Cup. And these are guys that are, you know, coming in here and playing in this thing for the first time that may just, you know, relish the format, and they're just happy to be where they are and soaking up every minute of it, that the standing around waiting doesn't bother them. But I think, again, this is one of these things. You watch Thursday, Friday, and it's a mixed bag because a lot of them are playing over at Spyglass. But if anybody on Thursday night, you know, if somebody gets off to a good start at Pebble Beach and they've got Spyglass coming on Friday, if somebody shoots, you know, the leader 7-under who played at Spyglass, but somebody shoots 3-under at Pebble Beach, but they're 4 shots back. But wait a minute, they got to play Spyglass tomorrow, but they're going to give you 40-1 on a guy because he's 4 shots back. Well, no, he's not really 4 shots back because he's going to play the easier course the next day, but you'll get the overlaid price on Thursday night.
That's an excellent point. Obviously, you did that with Finau last weekend and got a really good price on him, and he should have gotten there for you. But yeah, that's a great point here. You know, kind of pay attention to which courses these guys are playing and how they play on them. You know, it's a lot like Torrey Pines. We saw some guys go out there and just flag hunt on the north course. They went to the south course and struggled. Some guys played the south course first. You know, they wind up with scores that maybe aren't as impressive. Their prices reflect that. They go hang a low number on the north course. So that's a really good point and a great betting angle for these tournaments that are a little bit different. The Pro-Am format, the multiple course format, all this stuff early on in the year. I think it's definitely something for our listeners to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's an analogy, and it doesn't happen every week, but it'd be the same kind of premise when you look and say, how many times has a tournament been decided by the tee times? A lot. You know, guy plays early Thursday morning and wind's going to kick up Thursday afternoon, and then the weather's gorgeous Friday or Friday afternoon. You know, so half the field could be eliminated by getting a bad tee time on either of the first days because the bad weather's going to kick in and only impact half the field in that segment when the weather kicks in. So it's kind of an analogy to the tougher and easier course where, you know, there are advantages there. if the weather forecast holds true, and then there are advantages if you do well on the first day on the tougher course, but you're off the pace, you'll get an overlaid price playing the easier course the next day.
Sage advice and brilliant insights, as always, from Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio Sage? And Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, noon to 2, kshp.com. The shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. And then I'll put the links out for the show on my Twitter at Brian Blessing. And we'll put the link out for our the Hockey Betting Podcast as well, which is actually growing quite well. And knock on wood, I mean, again, the hockey to me is just the opportunities are there. And it's not that the odds makers aren't, you know, doing a good job on it. I think it's still just the working knowledge of long-standing angles that it don't matter who the teams are. They're just massive edges, way more than the NBA in terms of the schedule just dictates this team's going to play well or this team really is at a disadvantage.
As always, Brian, it's been a pleasure. At Brian Blessing on Twitter, kshp.com, sportsbookradio.com, and I'm sure you'll have some videos for us over on our Bang the Book YouTube page for this week as well.
Running out to do it today, man. We'll get the golf up. We'll get up and oh, by the way, do you get into the NASCAR at all?
I write the previews over at Bang the Book, so I follow along with it. Yeah.
Really, really, in the last 2 years, I have made a point of it. I love the NASCAR, and I just think matchups. They have the group matchup parlay or the group matchups where you have to pick a driver and everybody in the group is like plus 250. And I hit about three of them last year, clowning around, having some fun with it. But I mean, boy, you do your homework, you do a three teamer and everybody's plus 225 or higher. Let me tell you something, the return on investment's pretty good. So you got this weekend, we've got the, what's it called? The Clash. At Daytona, where they'll go
the
out Clash, there.
The punk band?
No, it's the race, the short race.
The duels?
It's the Bush Clash. It's called the Bush Clash.
Sounds like something completely different.
Buddy, the favorite is 8-1 is Joey Logano. The favorite is 8-1. It's the Bush Clash. It's Sunday, this coming Sunday. It's on FS1. And then the Daytona 500 the following week. And the restrictor plate racing, you can absolutely swing for the fences in restrictor plate racing.
Yeah, well, another market for us to talk about here on the show,
yeah.
I guess. Right?
Yeah, just throw another briquette on the fire.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, well, speaking of that, go get inside, warm yourself up, run out the book, do some videos.
It's freezing here.
All right.
Wait a minute, it's 30 in Vegas, it's 60 in Cleveland. The world is spinning backwards.
Yeah, well. That was yesterday, not today. It ain't 60 here today. We won't see 60 again until April. So,
all right, buddy.
All right, man. You take care.
Have a good one.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, sportsbookradio.com and kshp.com for that. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. We'll talk MLB. We'll talk some NBA with him. Then we'll chat with Wes Reynolds of VSiN about some college basketball and also get his thoughts for this week over at Pebble Beach. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.